Decision-making. As we saw in Chapter 6, participating in the markets is about decision-making. You must decide the conditions under which you will enter the market before developing a plan to implement the decision. Obviously, if you decide not to enter the market, there is no need for a plan. Broadly speaking, the decision-making process is as follows. 1. Decide what type of participant you're going to be. 2. Select a method of analysis. 3. Develop rules. 4. Establish controls. And 5. Formulate a plan. Depending on what your goals or objectives are on the continuum of conservative to aggressive, you will decide whether you are an investor or a speculator, which in turn will help you decide what markets to participate in, what method of analysis you'll use, what rules you'll develop, what controls you'll have, and how you will implement these things with a plan. We already know that no single analytical method will be successful for everyone. Instead, you are likely to find some type of method that is compatible with your tolerance for exposure. You will fill in the specifics based on your research and your tolerance for exposure. The first thing you decide is what type of participant you are going to be, investor or speculator. Then you select what market you are going to participate in, stocks, bonds, currencies, futures. The plan you develop must be consistent with the characteristics and time horizon of the type of participant you choose to be. Why? Changing your initial time horizon in the middle of a trade changes the type of participant you are, and is almost as dangerous as betting or gambling in the market. For example, what's an investment to most people who dabble in the stock market? 90% of the time, an investment is a trade that didn't work. People start with the idea of making money in a relatively short period of time, but when they start losing money, they lengthen their time frame horizon, and suddenly the trade becomes an investment. I really think you ought to buy XYZ here, Jim. It's trading at $20 and it's going to $30. We buy and it goes down to $15. It's really a good deal here at $15. It's going to be fine. So we buy more. Then it goes to $10. Okay, we're talking the long-term view. That's an investment. How many shares of Penn Central are in trust funds in this country? Lots. Because they invested in the Great American Railroad. When it went from $86 in 1968 to $6 in 1970, in their minds they couldn't sell it because they had lost too much. So they lengthened their time frame in order to rationalize hanging on to the losing position. Or how about IBM, the darling of institutional and individual investors alike? Its stock went from $175 in 1987 to $45 in 1993, with buy recommendations from analysts all the way down. One of the problems most stock players face is that they buy the stock because of a fundamental story. They believe a story just like I believed the bean oil story. We're going to run out of bean oil, there's going to be a shortage, and people will pay up. If I buy a stock because I think earnings are going to be up, but then the stock starts down, I've got a problem. As a stock player who believed the story, I have to decide either I'm stupid to have believed it in the first place or the market is wrong. Which do you think I'm going to pick? The market is wrong, of course. So I fight the market, hold the losing position, and turn my trade into an investment. Consider the following story about an individual investor reported by the Wall Street Journal. After seeing the nearly 87% return that 20th Century Investors Ultra Fund racked up in 1991 by concentrating on biotech and computer-related stocks, he took the plunge, paying about $18 a share for the Ultra Fund. A year later, with Ultra shares below $15 a share, he felt stuck. "Some people say cut your losses, but I've already lost too much," the investor said. "Luckily, I don't need the money right now." Well, is the market going to conveniently rebound for him when he does need the money? "I can't get out here, I'm losing too much," is the worst thing you'll hear a trader or investor say. What he is saying is, he's getting absolutely crushed, crucified, and buried, and he can't get out of the market because he's getting crushed, crucified, and buried. That's stupid. Anytime someone says he can't get out because he's losing too much, he has personalized the market. He just doesn't want to lose face by realizing the loss. To make matters worse, since most stock players pay for their stock in full, they are very prone to extending their original time horizon. Why? Because they are never forced out of the market when the position starts to lose money. Even when they buy stocks on margin, it's a 50% margin, as opposed to normal 4% to 12% for futures traders. So it's very easy in the stock market to let a loss get out of control simply by lengthening your time horizon and becoming an investor. The stock investor can stay in the position forever. A futures speculator, on the other hand, will be forced out of the market when the contract expires. So even if he has financed a losing futures position, he is forced into making a new decision at expiration as to whether to stay with the position. The stock player has no such forcing point, which is why it's especially important to decide what type of participant you're going to be when you're in the stock market. Next, you must select a method of market analysis that you are going to use. Otherwise, you will jump back and forth among several methods in search of supporting evidence to justify holding onto a market position. Because there are so many ways to analyze the market, you will inevitably find some indicator from some method of analysis that can be used to justify holding a position. This is true for both profitable and unprofitable positions. You will keep a profitable position longer than originally intended and possibly have it turn into a loss. And you will rationalize holding a losing position far beyond what you were originally willing to lose. Your analysis is the set of tools you will use to describe market conditions. Fundamental analysis in the stock market doesn't tell you when to enter the market. There isn't a magic formula combining the various fundamental data that tells you when to buy and when to sell. A certain level of expected earnings combined with its P/E ratio, price-to-book value ratio, and other fundamental variables doesn't specifically instruct you on when to make actual purchases and sales. The different methods of technical analysis don't always offer specific instructions on when to make purchases or sales either. They are a means of describing the conditions of the market. Analysis is simply that. Analysis. It doesn't tell you what to do or when to do it. In order to translate your analysis into something more than mere commentary, you need to define what constitutes an opportunity for you. That's what rules do. They implement your analysis. Rules are hard and fast. Tools, that is, methods of analysis, have some flexibility in how they are used. Fools have neither rules nor tools. You must develop parameters that will define opportunities and determine how and when you will act. How? By doing your homework, that is, research, testing, trial and error, and defining the parameters with rules. Your homework determines what parameters or conditions define an opportunity, and your rules are the if-then statements that implement your analysis. This means entry and exit points are derived after you have done your analysis. If the opportunity-defining criteria aren't met, you don't act. This doesn't mean a particular trade or investment that you pass up won't turn out to be profitable. It might have been an acceptable and profitable trade based on someone else's rules. Remember, participating in the markets is about making decisions. And as Drucker reminds us, there is no perfect decision. One always has to pay a price which might mean passing up an opportunity. You have to accept the fact that profitable situations will occur that you won't participate in. Don't worry about the ones you miss. They were someone else's. Your rules will only enable you to participate in some of the millions of possible opportunities, not all of them. The next step in decision-making is establishing controls, that is, the exit criteria that will take you out of the market either at a profit or loss. They take the form of a price order, a time stop, or a condition stop. That is, if a certain thing happens or fails to happen, then you are getting out of the market. Your exit criteria create a discrete event, ending the position and preventing the continuous process from going on and on. According to Drucker, controls follow strategy. So in terms of a business plan, market selection and entry criteria constitute the strategy, while exit criteria constitute controls. Drucker's observation means that the controls should be consistent with the strategy, not that they should be selected after the strategy is implemented. Unfortunately, most market participants pick their stop after they decide to enter the market, and some never put in a stop at all. You must pick the loss side first. Why? Otherwise, after you enter the market, everything you look at and hear will be skewed in favor of your position. For example, if someone has a long position and you ask him what he thinks about the market, is he going to tell you all the reasons why it should go down? Of course not. He's going to tell you all the reasons why it should go up. Another reason controls should precede strategy is that, as we learned in Chapter 7, you can't calculate the probability of a trade's being profitable. You can only calculate your exposure. So all you can do is manage your losses, not predict profits.